I'm Ryan Kelly with TheHomeLoanExpert.com. We've all heard that mortgage interest rates have started to rise, but I'm not here to scare you like those other banks and mortgage companies. I'm still locking loans in, saving people thousands of dollars a month. TheHomeLoanExpert.com.
The Home Loan Expert LLC.
Welcome to Thursday, Jock's Roundtable, along with Lance Taylor. I'm Ryan Brown. Dunaway continuing his vacation. He'll be back with us Monday. Rockstar is producing the show. Stu McCann also producing. Laurel Taylor also producing. As many producers we have.
A lot of production
on this show. Laurel also screening your calls at 834-9450, 800-239-9569. Everybody good? You good?
Yeah, you know, I know it's getting really close to football season. Not only is the Jocks kickoff party coming up next Tuesday, with your opportunity, by the way, to win a 2019 Ram truck. You knew that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I could win a Ram.
You could win a Ram. You can drive the exact truck that I am driving right now, which is pretty awesome.
By exact, you mean similar model or literally the exact truck?
No, probably not the exact one, but a 2019 Ram truck.
All right.
It would be a really good day for you and your entire family, friends, everything, if you were able to pull that off at the Jocks kickoff party next Tuesday at Good People. But I know it's really close when we've got to do our Jock staff preseason picks.
Yep. And so Turn mine in yesterday.
I just finished mine this morning, and I'm going to turn them in today.
What?
I filled mine in the last meeting we had, the meeting.
Yeah, I know. Rockstar did it literally during the meeting. I was watching him.
I'm interested in this because this thing goes deep. I mean, we go all the way to Mac. Division champs,
right?
Conference champs. I mean, AAC, CUSA.
Yep.
But I'm just interested in Rockstar's final four teams in the college football playoff.
I can't tell you. I know Alabama was in there.
Was Clemson in there?
Maybe.
Ohio State?
No Ohio State. I'm trying to think of
you. I had to have gone with a Big Ten team. Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State?
It might have been Penn State. I mean, it was.
And then probably a West Coast, a Stanford, Washington, USC? Texas, Oklahoma?
Oh, Washington.
Okay.
Yeah, Washington, probably Penn State and Washington. And then I put up my...
That's not terrible.
What's my sleeper team? Air Force.
Air Force?
That would be a Troy Calhoun Flyboy would really be getting it going.
May the force be with you.
Wait, so you've got Washington, don't you, Brown?
I've got Washington in my four team with Wisconsin, Alabama, and Clemson.
Yeah, and Dunaway's got Penn State, so I think we've kind of got a collaboration.
Yeah, I like that.
Got some crossover.
Well, I mean, don't forget now, Rockstar actually won... Not just on staff picks, the NCAA tournament, but the entire Jocks listening family, everybody that entered our contest, Rockstar won it.
I think this little thing is much, much harder than the
March
Madness.
I would agree with you.
Picking two teams. This is just you're making up the brackets yourself.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I'm trying to project 11 games, 12 games, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, at least in March Madness, I'm doing one game at a time.
I get that. But March Madness is so difficult to get Final Four participants. I feel really good that I've got some of these power fives right. Like Clemson, that's just one of those. It seems like when Kentucky was undefeated a couple of years ago, when Wisconsin beat them in the Final Four,
yeah,
you could pencil Kentucky into the Final Four. Now, whether or not they were going to win the championship, I don't know. It's kind of like Clemson this year. You can almost pencil them into the Final Four.
So we've kind of teased it because you've seen our conference picks, but we'll have the whole shooting matchup, and we'll tweet that out when it's available there at jocksfm.com. But like Lance said, the kickoff party just a few days away. It is Tuesday. All the information in RSVP at jocksfm.com. Some days I wake up and it's normally, you know, pretty easy to do this. But some days I wake up and I wonder, where are we going to start the show today, right? I mean, what would be the one thing you would need to start the show today? And some days it's pretty obvious. And even as close as we are to football season, it is obvious today that you start with what happened in Atlanta last night.
I don't get it, man. I mean, there are some Bush League things in sports. This is one of the most Bush League things I've seen this year.
If you did not see it last night, the very, very talented Ronald Acuña Jr. is leading off the game for the Braves, obviously in the bottom of the first there at home.
And everybody's excited about this because we're talking about a guy that's homered in five straight games and
three straight leadoff home runs.
So the anticipation, the buildup, Acuña comes to the plate, fans in SunTrust are going nuts, people on their couch watching this to see if it will happen again, something you just don't see.
97 miles an hour into his left elbow is what happens next. And the bench is clear, and the Braves are upset, as they should be. And Jose Urena, who threw the ball, is tossed out of the game. The bench is clear. Everybody argues. A few shoves here and there. But, I mean, I don't get this. You know how I feel about baseball's unwritten rules, and this is one of them.
Well, this really isn't, though.
I don't know. You say that.
Are you talking about for Urena to go after a Acuña?
Yeah. Well, hang on. Real quick, though. Do you respect Keith Hernandez?
Yeah, I mean, okay. I mean, a guy that played forever and one of the best defensive first basemen we've ever seen.
Okay, so he's not even involved in this, right? Yeah. He's doing the Mets-Orioles telecast, and apparently they cut in and show highlights of what has just happened. And here's what Keith Hernandez says to his play-by-play guy. All right, hang on. We'll get to Keith Hernandez in 1 second. Keith Hernandez basically was supportive of it.
Well, apparently, I saw the direction you were going there. I don't get it, though. And I obviously, Brian Snicker, Freddie Freeman, all on record calling this thing Bush League. Urena's lucky he got tossed last night because he's coming up. And I'm one of those guys. I don't say you can validate anything by going for a guy's head, but I'm putting one in the ear hole. I mean, he's taking a shot at your franchise right there and a guy that's just out there playing baseball. That's all Acuna's doing.
He's doing what he's paid to do.
I mean, right? He didn't show anybody up.
Right.
It's not like he slid spikes up.
Yep.
It's not like he's still in a base up seven.
Which are all of the things.
Those are all the things you hate.
Well, no, the spikes up thing, you can get hurt doing that. So I'm actually okay with that. I mean, that's a safety issue. Stealing a base up seven, throw me out if you don't like it. Right.
No, I get that. Yeah, but I'm just saying, those are the unwritten rules.
Right.
For a guy to go yard in five straight games in the last three against the Marlins, look, that's your bad pitching.
Yeah. Strike the guy out if you don't like it. I do not get this. So here's Hernandez in the Mets-Orioles telecast. Here's what he says.
They're killing you. You've lost three games.
Right.
He's hit three home runs. You got to hit him. I'm sorry. I mean, people are not going to like that. But, you know, you got to hit him, knock him down. At least, I mean, seriously knock him down if you don't hit him. And you never throw at anybody's head. You never throw at anybody's head or neck. You hit him in the back. You hit him in the fanny.
All right, they didn't do that. They hit him in the elbow, which could have been really, really bad. I mean, he had to leave the game.
Up and in 97.5 miles an hour. I mean, that was Acuna's fastest pitch he's ever thrown to open a game.
I know.
I mean, look, there was no doubt exactly what he was trying to do.
Sure.
It was so malicious, and I disagree with Hernandez there. Look, you can back him off the plate a little bit.
Yeah, I'm cool with that. Throw it inside, make him spin around.
Yeah, and pitch around him if you want.
Yeah, but don't hit him. I mean, it's cowardly, it's stupid, it's not competitive.
Well, look, I mean, a couple of things that are good. I mean, the x-rays are clean.
Yeah, he's going to be okay, it looks
Acuna
like.
Had to come out of the game. And, look, the streak continues because...
It doesn't even count as an at-bat, does it?
Yeah, I mean, it's hit by a pitch, so it's not an at-bat. So if he goes yard tonight to lead off the game, streak continues.
I do not understand that mindset in baseball. And Dontrell Willis, I mean, look, this is not... You know, Dontrell Willis is far from Roger Clemens, I get that. But Dontrell
had some good years.
Yeah, he did. Dontrell for the Marlins, even. Dontrell Willis last night, he said, look, you're taught that from the moment you're in the minor leagues. If a guy's hot against you, you got to make him uncomfortable and even hit him if you have to.
What happens to, no one is going to happen at least once that somebody's going to get severely injured. Like, no one is a bet. Like, who's the guy that got hit? I don't even know his name.
Ronald Acuna?
The guy that got hit. Yes. If they find out that this guy's, he may not play ball again.
Like if it was a serious elbow, which it could have been. I mean,
your intent was to hit him. Like this wasn't an accident, and you've taken a player out.
I mean, that's happened in baseball before, right?
Yeah, and I don't think that.
Is there a punishment for a pitcher? No one, like, that's obviously I did it intentionally. You cannot say that I did not.
Yeah, I don't think it would be any different.
Wow.
I mean, look, there's gonna be repercussions for Urena. I mean, he probably will be suspended. Obviously, he was tossed out of the game last night, and I don't know how many more times the Braves play the Marlins.
I think they've got a series coming right back up. I think I remember saying in August they play them in two separate series.
Well, we can only hope.
Yeah, I could be wrong about that.
If Urena throws against the Braves, I'm going to tell you right now.
I don't know that
Thursday through Sunday, a four-game set coming up in Miami. So
a real good chance you would see him again, right?
I mean, he is not scheduled to pitch.
Do you? If you're
at least not right now.
If you're the Braves, though, do you come back and settle I mean, is that the other unwritten rule? Is I have to come back and settle the score here?
Yeah, and I typically agree with Hernandez. You never go high and tight like that. But I'm going for ear hole. Ooh. Just hope it doesn't get you in the jaw.
Sorry, got you in the jaw.
Be eating through a tube for 6 months.
Now, a lot of people will say, and we'll ask Buster about this. Buster coming up at 6:30. Buster on ESPN. A lot of people will say. Hey, you got to throw the guy inside, which I'm cool with, But then other people will say, look, pitchers don't have the control they used to. I mean, do you think that's true?
Like, well,
real quick, Rebel says Bob Gibson was the best ever at this, and
he was.
That was the reputation he has, but he didn't hit you. He just got close to
he
you.
He got close to you, but if he did hit you, that's just too bad. There was nothing you were going to do with Bob Gibson. But Urena has a history of control problems. Entering the game, he's tied for second in the NL with 10-hit batters. He tied for the major league lead last year with 14, so he's got control problems. But this is way too obvious. When you come out and you're going high and tight at 97.5, it's not even close to the plate. And based on what Acuna's doing, you know exactly what was going on last night. And I just thought it was complete Bush League.
Yeah, it was 100% Bush League, and I'm thankful Acuna was not hurt. It's one of these things I'll never understand in baseball.
Yeah, because if he goes down, I mean, the Braves are one of the big stories of Major League Baseball, and I just don't know. Obviously, the Braves are still a good team, but this offense right now is really based on what Acuna's doing. I mean, he is setting the table, not even setting the
best
table.
Best leadoff hitter in the game right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I was saying, like, you know, historically or even in comparing careers, but at this point, this moment in time, best leadoff hitter in the game. And the Braves are one of the hottest teams in baseball. So, an absolute shame. I will never understand baseball's unwritten rules, and this is one of them, that you got to hit a guy if he gets hot. How about just striking him out?
Yeah, Braves get the win, though. So, yep. They complete the four-game sweep, and the Phillies did get a win, coming back from three runs down last night to the Red Sox. So, still two games up on the Phillies in the NL East.
All right. So, we'll talk more about that with Buster coming up in just a little bit. Buster Olney with us in about 15 minutes. So we'll discuss that with him from ESPN. Also, Auburn scrimmage yesterday. Some news coming out of that scrimmage. I think the one thing there are two positions I think people are watching at Auburn. It would be offensive line and running back, right?
Offensive line, running back, and maybe defensive back a little bit, but not nearly as much as on the offensive side. Yeah, obviously the offensive line, you want to make sure that thing's patched up. You've got your five guys up front.
Being the unwritten rule of baseball that is stupid, and all those are dumb. It's a non-competitive attitude. I hate to sound like Nick Saban or Gus Malzahn or one of these coaches or Bill Belichick, but do you agree with me? It's a non-competitive attitude. You're not competing.
If I'm Jose Urena, you know what I want to do? Look, this guy has led off three consecutive games with a home run.
Yeah.
He ain't leading off against me. I'm playing the percentage. I'm stopping the streak.
I don't understand if you're Don Mattingly. How you let your guy operate. I would be more upset than everything that happened. Now, first of all, Don Mattingly probably thumbs this up. I mean, he probably says, okay, let's do this, right? I don't think you just go out there and do this on your own without Mattingly knowing. He played the game a long time, Lance. He's got to know this is coming,
I mean,
right?
I'm sure there was probably some discussion.
Yes. So if I'm Don Mattingly, the thing that upsets me more than anything is that my pitch, or if I were Don Mattingly, I don't think this is true of Mattingly, but if I were Mattingly, the thing that would upset me more than anything is my pitcher didn't want to compete. He just wanted to plunk a guy and send him to the base. He didn't want to try to strike him out.
And I really don't know what the Marlins get out of this. I mean, we're talking about, you know, arguably the worst team in baseball. I mean, right now, along with the Padres, they have the worst record in the National League. Now, nobody's going to be as bad as the Baltimore Orioles. But, I mean, this is one of the worst teams in baseball. So, you know, I mean, it's not like you can make a run at the pennant. Go out there, compete. Try to continue to build.
That's what I would like to see.
I mean, it's just, I mean, Derek Jeter to be involved with this organization.
I know. That's been a disaster. Hey, how'd you sleep last night? Not so great, huh? Try the new ZzzQuil Pure Z's melatonin gummies, endorsed by Lance Taylor even. ZzzQuil Pure Z's, drug-free with an optimal dose of melatonin, unique blend of botanicals to help you fall asleep naturally and wake up with no next day grogginess. You don't look groggy at all.
Hey, look,
ZzzQuil Pure Z's.
I get nothing out of this, but I got multiple texts yesterday asking me where you can pick these up.
I'm sure you're a local drugstore.
Yeah, and local drugstore or grocery store. But I'm telling you, the taste on these things, amazing. Yep.
All right, scrimmage number two, Stu, cup four. Scrimmage number two, Gus Malzahn after the scrimmage yesterday. Ask the question I think most people want to know if you're an Auburn fan, because Gus Malzahn had said coming out of scrimmage one, they would like to have the offensive line nailed down. Chip Lindsey came behind him and kind of tapped the brakes on that and said, I know coach would like that. I'm not certain that that's what we're going to have done. Then they have the Calvin Ashley injury, which certainly eliminated having anything nailed down because that injury happened during the scrimmage. And here was Coach Gus Malzahn after scrimmage number two on the same subject, the offensive line.
Pretty close. Like I said, we got some really good information after today. And, you know, I think right now it's kind of more one of those things that you say, okay, how many guys do you have that can help, you know, this first game depth-wise? You got to start with that, and I think we're getting real close to saying who can play the very first game. And you always, hey, if this guy goes down, who's the next guy? So I think we're really close to that. As far as the starters, there'll be some discussion. You know, Chip and JB, you know, we'll communicate. And this scrimmage was very important. I think it'll give us, you know, some good information too.
I'm not playing read between the lines here, Lance, but it sounds more like the one thing they settled in this scrimmage is kind of like, all right, who are the 10 guys in the 2-deep, more so than who are the first guys in the 2-deep.
Yeah, but it does look like Caleb Kim at center, Mike Horton at right guard. You know, we thought Jack Driscoll might be locked in at right tackle, but Austin Troxell split time with him yesterday. And,
yeah.
You know, this was a physical practice. They run over 100 plays. They said 80% were running plays. They wanted to see who could hold on to the football. Now, there were multiple fumbles.
I had a friend of mine that used to be tight with some of the Alabama coaches, and he would occasionally go to a scrimmage, and each year they would invite him to one of the closed scrimmages, and he would always say, I want to go to the bloodletting. And he said, there's always that one scrimmage that's the bloodletting, where they separate the men from the boys, and they figure out who wants to play and who doesn't want to play. This one sounds like it had some elements of that.
It really does, yeah.
I mean, it was, Gus Malzahn even said, hey, it was hot, it was miserable out there, and it was a physical scrimmage. And from the descriptions, again, it's a closed scrimmage, but from the descriptions you get, and you said 80% run plays, that sounds like that one, there was a little manhood testing going on there, doesn't it? So that was the scrimmage at Auburn yesterday. Now, I teased this going to break because we've talked a lot about even some secondary at Auburn. There's a pretty good battle back there. We've talked about running back at Auburn. There's a pretty good battle going on there. Obviously, offensive line, really good battle going on there. If I ask you the question, who would be maybe the most difficult guy to replace from all of Auburn's losses last year? This would not be your first answer. But do you think people would eventually get to Carlson, Daniel Carlson?
Yeah, I think Carlson would be definitely a top five guy. But I think there's so much respect and confidence in his brother, Anders.
He's got the same last name, so you respect it, right?
Now, again, once he kicks in his first game against Washington, I mean, that's going to be his first live action, so you just never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, the elements are going to be good. He's going to be playing at Mercedes. So, you know, with all things considered, you've got a lot of confidence that he's going to pick up where Daniel left off. But still, we're talking about one of the greatest kickers in SEC history.
Daniel Carlson was as close to an automatic as you could get. I mean, he was 3 points for Auburn the minute they basically crossed, the 40?
You know what's crazy, though? When you look at the numbers overall last year, he was 23 of 31. He missed 8 field goals.
It's hard to believe that.
But it really is.
Yeah. I mean, that was probably, percentage-wise, his worst season, wasn't it?
Probably so. 50-plus, he was 4 of 8.
Yeah. Because I know his junior year, Auburn's offense at times could get a little bogged down. But the thing you knew was the minute you crossed the 40, you had 3 points in the pocket. I mean, it was as solid as it could get.
Yeah, and I think Minnesota feels like that now.
Well, he's already hit a 57-yarder for him. So at elevation, obviously, but still kicking inside that dome. That's why I said when he was drafted there, Lance, I was like, that guy, I remember saying it the day after the draft, congratulations to Daniel Carlson. You just got a ticket to a 15 or 20-year NFL career. Kicking in a dome in Minnesota, are you kidding me? I mean, That's money in the bank right
now,
there, buddy.
Now, of course, he will have to kick once a year in Green Bay, once a year in Chicago.
Yeah, but he also gets another dome game in Detroit. So, you know, 9 times a year he's kicking in a dome. But you're right. I mean, he's going to have some bad element games.
Would you absolutely hate to be Mason Crosby and have to kick in Green Bay?
I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? That would seem to be the worst place to be a kicker. And if you're, I would imagine if you're Daniel Carlson or whoever the Vikings kicker has been over the years, kicking in that dome, Morton Anderson or whoever it was, or was it Gary Anderson? It was Gary Anderson, right?
Yeah.
Gary and Morton was New Orleans. Gary Anderson kicking in that dome, don't you probably just pray that you catch Green Bay and Chicago early in the season on the road? You just pray you don't get that December road game in those places.
I don't think it would be fun to kick in New England or New York either, though.
Oh, I wouldn't think so either, but Vinatieri was one of the best we've ever seen. And he kicked a ton in New England. But I agree with you. It seems like it'd be an awful place to kick. The best place to be a kicker would have to be Atlanta or New Orleans, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I would think you're in a dome. You're still playing in the NFC South. So when you go outdoors,
that's right,
you're playing in Carolina or Tampa.
Yeah, your road games aren't that bad.
Yeah.
I mean, Tampa, there's a chance you're going to get nasty weather, rain, but it's going to be, you know, it's not going to be freezing.
You don't have to wear sleeves.
Yeah, I would think Atlanta or New Orleans. But all that to be said, Gus Malzahn, and he hasn't talked a lot about Anders Carlson, but he was asked about him after the scrimmage yesterday, and here's what the coach said.
I think he's had a good camp so far. You know, he is good that, You know, when you go live field goals and that kicker, I mean, that's good. That's good for him to see who can handle it. And so it was good for him to get those kicks today, and he's kicked the ball well.
I think the expectation is this guy's his brother. And that's bad. That's big expectations. Because his brother, like you said, is one of the best we've ever seen in the
SEC. I think we saw it with the Grammaticas at Kansas State. I think we've seen it with
Which one was the better Grammatica? Were they about the same, really?
No.
Martin was the better.
Bill was
the lesser,
yeah.
Right? But there was an obvious difference.
Yeah, I mean, Martin was a guy that hit a 63-yarder at K-State. I mean, he was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then you had the
The Aguayos
from Florida State.
Roberto was the best Aguayo at Florida State, but he kind of fell apart in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, once he got the yips, once he got to Tampa Bay.
Yeah. It's punning, I know, but you had the kicking Colquitts at Tennessee.
All of them were good.
They were all about the same to me.
Dustin was probably the best.
I guess so. I mean, he played in the NFL forever, didn't he?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've seen brother to brother, but here's the whole thing. When you change levels, and I'm glad you brought up the Aguayos, because Roberto was automatic in college. He goes to the NFL and kind of falls apart. So you never know when you get to a new level how it changes.
Well, when you start to miss a couple and you know you're getting paid and you know that, you know, 52 other guys are relying and they work so hard and you only get so many Sundays in the NFL and, you know, one kick can cost you everything.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I was, again, and I brought this up on Monday, I watched the replay of the national championship with Georgia and Alabama, and Papanastas to have a 29-yarder to win a national championship?
Could have been a hero in Alabama lore.
But you just think about how much work everyone puts in to get to that moment, and look, you can point to other directions. Why was Alabama in this situation to begin with? It shouldn't come down to a kick. But when it comes down to a 29-yard field goal to win a game in a controlled atmosphere like the Mercedes Dome, you got to make that kick.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I don't care if it's scholarship or if you're getting paid in the NFL, the expectation is you make that kick.
Now, we tend to forget he made a 42-yarder earlier in the fourth quarter that cut it to a one-possession game. A huge kick. But that's one of those, if Alabama goes on to lose that game, he never gets over that. He still might not ever get over it.
But it almost never gets talked about now, because what you talk about is Tua Tagovailoa to Devontae Smith. But he had a chance to be the call that goes down forever. And he missed it.
You see what I'm looking bottom right? There is one blockbuster video left in America. You know where it is, Rocky?
We talked about it on the air.
Is it Oregon?
Bend, Oregon, yeah.
I don't think there'd be one in Alaska.
Does that show you there's nothing to do in
Well, the last two in Alaska closed. There were three left, and two of them were in Alaska. And they apparently, up in that part of the country, the internet's not great.
Huh.
So Netflix isn't a great option. So Blockbuster still manages to somehow stay in business.
Does Wayne Huizenga still get a cut from that last Blockbuster?
That's a great question.
Is he still alive?
I think Huizenga passed, right? Obvious Washington advantage in this game and an obvious Auburn advantage. Do you have one? Do you think... We may save it, but can you find an obvious advantage for either team in this game?
I mean, when you start to look at maybe the biggest strength from either one of these teams, it's probably Auburn's defensive line. But then when you start to look at Washington's offensive line, it's one of the best in college football. So it's hard to say that's a distinctive advantage for Auburn, as good as that unit's going to be. I mean, you start to look at this offensive line that Chris Peterson has put together, and it really is one of the best right now in college football.
That's interesting.
I mean, 97 career starts. It's an offensive line that only gave up 20 sacks last year.
In most games Auburn plays, that's where their advantage is going to be, is that defensive front versus the other team's offensive line. But they play some pretty good offensive lines, too, because Georgia's got one, right? Alabama's got one.
I think the distinctive advantage, though, for Washington is their defensive line against Auburn's offensive line.
Yeah, that may be where you find it. I don't think either team's got a quarterback advantage. Jordan in Birmingham starts us this hour. Welcome up, Jordan. How are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing, LP and Brown?
Doing great, man. You okay?
Yeah, man. So I kind of want to talk about this Braves game last night, and I got two questions or things I want to point out. The first question, after all the talk, LT and Brown, do you guys think that it was intentional, yes or no?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, there's no doubt it was intentional.
Well, I don't know if it was intentional, because here's my question. You know, if it was intentional, what's the point? Well, what good is it going to do for the Marlins? They're 20 games behind.
You still got to play the season out. The thought behind it is, this is A, flawed thinking, and B, just stupidity. But the thought behind it is, It's my job to make him uncomfortable in the batter's box. I got to make him, next time he's up to the plate, think about that pitch and not be comfortable in the box. I got to get him off center. I got to get him uncomfortable. That's the old school thought behind it. As Buster said, as the years go by, it seems like that has gotten out of baseball, but clearly it hasn't.
Yeah, well, I don't agree with the old school way of this whole retaliation type deal that, I mean, baseball players and pitchers think they have to do. You know what I'm saying? You know?
Yeah, I agree.
I get it. You know, Acuna's been on a hot streak for the past week or whatever. But, you know, the more you think about it, the situation, I just don't think that, I had a little feedback there in the mic. Sorry. The more you think about the situation, I just don't think it was intentional. I mean, I get he wants to bring his hot stuff on the first pitch, and I just think it coincidentally he lost control of it and hit him. You know, when you just think about the fact that they're 20 games behind, it's just hard for me to think that that was intentional. But, you know, also you got to think Braves fans really shouldn't be too upset about this. I don't think it's really going to hurt their chances as far as making the playoffs, because you got to remember how hot the Braves were in April without Acuña.
Well, I agree, but
yeah,
if
but
my
Acuña
best...
right now is one of the best players in the game, and if
and
he breaks
took
a wrist
pitch
there,
to the elbow, yeah.
And I adamantly disagree. We appreciate the call, but look, I mean, it was obvious what he was doing.
And if his control is that bad, he needs to be in Double A.
Well, look,
because you're way inside.
Again, he is. He's a guy that actually led the bigs last year and hit batters, and he's second right now in the National League. So he does have some control issues, but it's obvious. First pitch of the game, 97.5. I mean, it was obvious Urena was actually going after it.
Well, Stu, let's hear from Urena. His English isn't the best in the world. I mean, I'm just being honest, Rockstar. I've set this up before people hear it. So you've got to listen close. No, I mean, he speaks fine English, but I'm just saying it's obviously, you know, it was not his first language. So
it's not Bobby Bruce, right?
It's a little better than Bobby.
A little clear.
All right. So here is Urena after the game, his explanation of what happened.
Can you see why they were so mad?
That is the thing, like, I don't understand. Because even, like, you know, I hit him. But the thing, like, everybody for the team get out, you know, to the dugout and try to attack me. That is the thing, like, you know, they know, like, something wrong. But, you know, like, I didn't even think about it because, you know, I make the bad pitch, you know, I miss my part inside in the corner the way I want to start with him, you know, try to get inside, move the feet, and we can go back outside, you know, because he be high, you know, you got to try to make good plan, whatever I be working with him, and that was the thing, but, you know, everybody tried to blame with something, so try to take me out again, because they think, like, I didn't purpose, how I go to the purpose, just wait 5 days for throw one pitch, that don't make no sense, right?
Okay, let me translate real quick. I had to listen a lot.
He explained it right. I'm on his side. That's a good point he made.
No. Let me explain.
Please explain what that was.
Okay, because I had to listen to it several times this morning. So basically what he said was it was our game plan to pitch him inside, get him off his feet, and then come back outside. Basically, he says, I didn't intend to hit him. What sense does that make? I've had to wait 5 days to pitch. You think I'm going to throw one pitch and be out of the game? That was his defense. Is I've had to wait 5 days for this spot. You think I want to leave the game after one pitch?
Well, I will tell you, man, you've got a future, a bright future as a translator.
Yeah.
In Major League Baseball.
Well, it took me a while.
Man,
it was
impressive.
It was slightly easier watching him say it when you could watch his mouth move than listening to him.
Yeah.
Just a moment ago, but that's basically what he said: is I'm not going to wait 5 days to pitch and then leave the game after one pitch. How dumb is that?
He did get a paycheck.
He did seem puzzled that the Braves were upset by it, which was striking to me. I would imagine the Braves are going to be upset by this. But, I mean, the Braves fans are going to applaud when they play the Marlins, what, a week from now?
Yeah.
That series starts next Thursday?
Next Thursday.
I mean, they're going to want their guy to go after the Marlins in retaliation, right?
Oh, of course.
I mean, it's going to happen.
At least right now, Urena is not scheduled to pitch in that 4-game set. I don't know how that's possible, but he is not scheduled.
Right, but, I mean, the unwritten rule of baseball, which is stupid, but the unwritten rule of baseball is you go after their leadoff hitter, right? The next time you play them, you got to hit their leadoff hitter. Is that the way this retaliation works, Lance? You're more of a baseball guy than me.
That's the way it will work. It's almost too obvious. Both teams will be warned. Major League Baseball will be very much involved in this, so it might not be that obvious. They might wait, and they'll kind of pick their spot. But boy, I wish Urena was going to be pitching in this.
Yeah, it would be must watch, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
If Urena was pitching, 100% you'd watch that. Now, here was my solution to this, and I understood as I tweeted this solution last night, Lance, that Major League Baseball can't just do this unilaterally. They've got to go to the players' union and say, here's a rules change. And Buster talked about that in the last hour. Buster was with us on the Bud Light Hotline. You can hear it podcasted at jocksfm.com. Here was my solution. If Major League Lance wants to fix this, if Major League Baseball, you come in, you suspend Urena 30 games, and you don't allow the Marlins to replace him on the roster. I think that would bring an end to this. If I'm a franchise and I got to give a guy up for 30 games and I can't replace him on the roster, so I'm playing a man down the rest for 30 days.
But here is there is a 1% chance Urena didn't mean to do this, that it actually got away from him. Well, because based on his history, this is a guy that is known to hit a lot of batters.
But here's what I would say to that. If his control's that bad, he needs to sit down for 30 days. We need to back him off a little bit for the safety of the players.
You can't be that extreme with it. I did look at this, though. I'm looking at the Marlins schedule, and this just absolutely sucks because we love intrigue, especially this time of year, Major League Baseball. So Urena actually pitches the night before they start the four-game set with the Braves. He finishes the two-game set against the Yankees. And then he pitches the first game back from that four-game set on Tuesday at Boston.
So he's got the bookends.
Yeah.
But a rain delay or a rain out,
that's
would,
what we need.
A rain out would push all that back a day, right?
Yep.
But, I mean, he'll be facing a suspension, but obviously he could appeal that suspension. I mean, it was a disgusting display last night by the Marlins. Just terrible. And look, I'm far from a Braves homer. I'm a Nationals fan. Both these teams are in my division. I don't care one way or the other.
Yeah, look, I grew up hating the Atlanta Braves.
But as a Dodgers fan, right? Because that was a divisional rival.
The old NL West.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is beyond the pale. I mean, this is just awful. Disgusting that it exists in sports. And Buster nailed it. And we were just talking about it in the break. What would the reaction be today if Urena were throwing a no-hitter in the seventh, Acuna charged him and hit him with a bat in the elbow? Because it's exactly what happened. What would be the reaction today, Lance?
Or
if that
even
happened?
On the other side, if a Braves pitcher goes after Urena,
I mean, what would the reaction be today?
Complete meltdown.
It would be a complete meltdown, and there are people actually defending what Urena did. Major League Baseball borderline Hall of Famers like Keith Hernandez. 6:28. We're hypocritical sometimes. The media, we want honesty, but then when people are honest, sometimes we kill them for being honest, Lance. Jalen Ramsey was honest. I'll give him that. I don't know if he should have done all this or not, but he was at least honest about it in the GQ magazine.
Again, this is one of the best things I've ever seen because typically there's two people that talk more smack than anyone in sports, and that is defensive backs and wide receivers.
Yep.
And it's just a known commodity. But right now, Jalen Ramsey, who, again, arguably the best cornerback, best cover corner in the NFL, this guy does not stop chirping.
He does not.
And so he gets an interview, a sit-down with GQ Magazine, and basically they do exactly what they needed to do, and they ask him about almost every single quarterback in the NFL.
So here's how it goes. I'm just going to read them to you real quick, and I'll give the quarterback's name, and I'll give Jalen Ramsey's.
And I'll tell you if I agree with what he said.
Okay, Josh Allen, he's trash.
Look, I don't think you can call him trash. I think he's going to be trash.
But we haven't even seen him play a game.
Yeah, but he hasn't played a game. And he does point out, look, this guy against Power Fives never did anything. Now, he confuses Iowa for Iowa State.
That's okay.
And but when you start to look at the numbers, I mean, they were awful. I mean, this is a guy that was completely dominated. One touchdown, 8 interceptions against Nebraska, Iowa, and Oregon over 2 years. And the Cowboys lost those 3 games by a combined 92 points. They were terrible. I agree he's going to be trash, but you can't say that yet.
Baker Mayfield gets how he was the top pick.
I don't have a problem with that. I mean, that's a pat on the back for Baker, right?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I get how he's the top pick. Yeah. I can absolutely see it. Jackson, he's going to do a good job.
Got no problem with that one.
Yeah. I mean, guys, he's won Heisman Trophy, right? Joe Flacco, he sucks.
I just don't know how you can say Flacco sucks when Flacco 99.9% will be your starting quarterback at the beginning of the year for the Baltimore Ravens, and we'll see how the season unfolds for John Harbaugh. But this is a guy where he's been inconsistent in the regular season, but he still won a Super Bowl. And one of the reasons they won that Super Bowl is Joe Flacco was that good that postseason.
Now, on the flip side, Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, he says, doesn't suck.
Yeah, I love that because that's just the obvious answer. Yeah. There's no need to say two of the greatest quarterbacks of all time or Hall of Famers, but doesn't suck is comical.
Tyrod Taylor, underrated. You've said this yourself, actually.
Yeah, I agree with Jalen Ramsey here. I think Tyrod Taylor is an underrated quarterback.
Jimmy Garoppolo, guess he's good.
I'm kind of with him on this. I guess he's good, too.
I guess he's good.
I mean, look, San Francisco had nothing to play for. They were playing some teams that had nothing to play for in the second half of the season. I guess he's good. We'll see.
Lest you think he's just being negative, Deshaun Watson and Carson Wentz, two young guys, about both of them, he says, will be an MVP.
I agree. I've said it. I said it last year. Wentz will be the best player in this league in the next 2 or 3 years. And I've said it with Deshaun Watson. I think he is going to be a top five quarterback.
Jared Goff, your guy, average to above average. I think he nailed that one.
I kind of agree with this, too. Look, he played above average last year. He played below average the year before, so the jury's kind of still out. I've got no problem with that comment.
Jalen Ramsey to GQ Magazine on Dak Prescott. He's okay.
I think he got that one.
Yeah, it was really good year one, kind of bad year two. He's okay. Kirk Cousins, according to Jalen Ramsey, he's a winner.
I disagree.
Yeah, he hasn't won a ton. Yeah. I think he's actually a pretty good quarterback that hasn't won a ton.
He's got him to the postseason once. They didn't win a game in the postseason. I really don't know what Kirk Cousins has done. He's put up some pretty good numbers. He did that in a Sean McVay system a couple of years ago, and he's going to have an opportunity now. If he doesn't win, I mean, we'll see. If you can't win with the weapons you've got now in Minnesota with that defense, then you're not a winner.
Russell Wilson, quote-unquote, good. I think you would disagree with this. I think he's elite.
Yeah.
Ben Roethlisberger. Decent at best.
Okay, this is where he really goes.
It's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
He's going a little sideways. He's out of his head right here. I mean, Roethlisberger is really good. I don't like Roethlisberger that much, but he is really, really good. He is a Hall of Famer, as you said.
Now, first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, it takes him 5 years to get in. Eli Manning, Odell makes him.
Okay, correct me if I'm wrong here, but Eli's got not one but two rings, right?
I don't think either one of them were with Odell Beckham Jr., were they?
Right, neither one.
Okay.
And since Odell, look.
May make him right now, but he didn't back then.
And Odell, without him on that offense last year, it was really a bad offense. And 2 years ago, with Odell was blowing up, they were 11-5. But Odell does not make Eli Manning.
Now, the uncomfortable question, his own quarterback that was good enough to get them to the AFC Championship game, Blake Bortles, he says, Blake, do what he got to do.
All right.
It's a perfect way to put it, because you're not really taking a shot, I guess, if you're Blake Bortles. What do you read into this?
So it's not a real compliment either, though.
Well, it's not, but Blake Bortles really has done nothing to deserve a lot of credit in this league. Again, I thought last year, well, it's not even an argument, that was his best year as a professional in Jacksonville, and it got better as the season rolled on, and he played well in the postseason.
Nick Foles, good enough to win a Super Bowl. That's what he said. He's good enough to win a Super Bowl. That was true.
A lot of this is just comical, because going into last year, even going into this year, do you believe Nick Foles is good enough to win a Super Bowl?
I do not.
I mean, he did last postseason. It was like a magical journey, but I don't believe Nick Foles is good enough to win a Super Bowl, but he was last year.
Drew Brees, really good. So he's a Drew Brees fan.
Yeah, that's about his best compliment, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's about to be the leading passer in NFL history. Andrew Luck, don't think he's good.
I disagree with this. Why could he just say fragile or can't stay on the field?
I don't think he's good, is what he said. Matthew Stafford, he's straight.
Another compliment.
All right.
Another compliment. He's straight, okay. And Ryan Tannehill, haven't heard good things.
No, I haven't either. I haven't seen good things, right?
You should watch CBS. And Matt Ryan, here's one I don't think he gets right. Overrated. Now, he says Kyle Shanahan's offensive system made Matt Ryan.
I think those are probably the most controversial comments.
Yeah.
Because Matt Ryan 2 years ago was an MVP. And look, and I understand that was Kyle Shanahan's system. But it's not like Matt Ryan just totally fell apart last year. I mean, they were a game away from the NFC Championship game.
I think that gets forgotten because of what the Eagles went on and did to the Vikings and then did in the Super Bowl to the Patriots, the fact that the Falcons had every legitimate opportunity to win that football game and couldn't get it done. I mean, they had every single opportunity to win that game in Philadelphia.
Yeah, here's the deep quote from Jalen Ramsey. Quote, I think Matt Ryan's overrated. You can't tell me you win an MVP 2 years ago, and then last year you're a complete bust, and you still got Julio Jones. There's no way that should happen. I don't care. You know what that tells me? That tells me Shanahan left, went to San Francisco, got Garoppolo, made Garoppolo this big thing, and now Garoppolo is a big name, and now Ryan had this bad year? All right, well, was it really you or was it your coach? He was doing what was asked of him, and it was making him look really, really good. I think a lot of people, end quote, I think a lot of people will blame Steve Sarkisian.
I was about to say that. Matt Ryan will not take the blame for this. If this offense isn't productive, it will all be on Steve Sarkisian. I mean, it was already starting, Lance, last week. What was that, Friday night, when they didn't score against the Jets? Sarkisian was already getting heat for that, and that's a preseason game.
Look, I know Matt Ryan's numbers weren't great last year. He still went over 4,000 yards, but interceptions went from 7 to 12, and touchdowns went from 38 to 20. So that was the drastic drop.
Have you read the whole article? I've read the excerpts. Will you go back and read it now?
Maybe. I would ask you this, though. Tom Coughlin is a pretty buttoned-up guy, right?
Yeah, to say the least.
Yes. I don't think he's going to like this. Tom Coughlin is head of football ops there in Jacksonville.
Yeah, he doesn't strike me as reading this and smiling. Yeah, he doesn't strike me as smiling at all, frankly.
One of the reasons this organization has been able to turn around a complete 180 is because of Tom Coughlin. I think he respects Jalen Ramsey's game, but I don't think he likes Jalen Ramsey going on record with every single quarterback and having some of these controversial thoughts.
So there are three more preseason games tonight, by the way. If you're hungry for some football, tonight is your night. Eagles-Patriots. We've seen that game before. Steelers-Packers. It's two pretty good helmets in that one. And the game you'll actually get to see on ESPN at 7 o'clock, Jets-Redskins. Any of those get you fired up?
Not really, but we will have a lot coming up on one of those games. Let me ask you this. Nick Saban. We always default to Nick Saban. Let's say, I don't know, pick a defensive back for Alabama. You don't really have any proven guys. Let's go back to last year. Let's say that Minka Fitzpatrick was on record.
Okay.
And he was talking to somebody that went through the 13 other starting quarterbacks in the SEC.
Jarrett Stidham. He's pretty good. Nick Fitzgerald. He's okay. Danny Etling. Trash.
Yeah, I mean,
that would be hilarious. We would lap that up.
I think most fan bases would think it's hilarious. What do you think Nick Saban would have to say?
Oh,
about
he would
that?
Not like it one bit. You remember the press conference Nick Saban did right after Jalen Hurts had his comments? Not Jalen Ramsey. Jalen Hurts had his comments. I think everybody's entitled to their opinion. I don't think we'd get that same response from Nick Saban. Boy, it would have been tremendous, though. We would have lapped that one right up. You have to admit. An Alabama defensive back just tearing into every quarterback? Danny Etling, trash.
Now, do you think this will be...
Jalen Hurts. Jalen do what he's got to do.
GQ being able to fish this out of Jalen Ramsey. And again, I don't think it's difficult to get controversial comments from Jalen Ramsey.
I don't think they had to bait the hook, Lance.
But do you think there will be media members now asking defensive backs specifically about quarterbacks trying to get responses like
this?
Yep,
this will be the new trend. Yeah, get an outspoken defensive back. And like you said, nobody likes to chirp more than a defensive back or a receiver. Get an outspoken defensive back. Now, what would be interesting to me, you will never get a quarterback to do this. But you can get some chirping receivers to do the same thing about defensive backs. That'd be the angle I would take. Go, who's the most outspoken receiver? Jarvis Landry's pretty outspoken. You know, you got guys, Odell Beckham. You got guys like that, Antonio Brown. I'd go to some of these elite receivers and see if I could get them to bust down some defensive backs.
Do you think Jalen Ramsey would go on record about the 32 coaches in the NFL? I mean, I'm going to say Jalen Ramsey would.
I think Jalen Ramsey would. I think that'd be fascinating, too.
Yeah, I wonder how many others would.
Yeah. Scoob's on a cell up next with us on the Jack Trail Table. What's up, Scoob? How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, guys. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you.
I got a couple of questions, and they're both on opposite ends of the spectrum.
All right.
I'm going to kind of deal a little bit with the first one. You guys were talking about Atlanta and Sark. If I'm not mistaken, didn't Julio Jones for the season, and you might have already discussed it, didn't he have like single-digit touchdowns?
Oh, yeah, he always does. I mean, that's really, if you're looking for a negative with Julio, and I guess you could blame it on maybe play calling, whatever you want. I mean, Julio, for his career, I think he averages 7 or 8 a year.
The only year he's had double-digit touchdowns, was in 2012. He had 10. Other than that, he's always single digits.
I mean, he's got 43 touchdowns over 7 years.
Yeah.
It just seems like the numbers should be a lot more escalated there. But I don't know, with him being such a talent and such a playmaker, I don't know. That just blows my mind. But, yeah, I do agree with you guys. I think sometimes Stark just looks lost. He just looks like he just can't run the offense at all.
I think a lot of times when Alabama fans watch Atlanta, they feel like they dodged a bullet there.
Oh, boy. Tell me about it. I'm praying every day and very grateful for that. But I guess I want to talk to you guys about Alabama's receiving corps. All the way from their receivers into their tight ends. Can you ever remember a time, And I want to talk about, I guess, college football across the landscape, where a team had so much talent being able to catch the ball. That just blows my mind. And I hope you guys have a great Thursday.
All right. Thank you very much, Scoobs. I don't know who I would say would be the gold standard of that, a team with so much talent to catch the ball. I don't.
Are we talking about this year?
I was just thinking in the history of college football.
Oh.
I mean, I don't know where I would say that was the best group of receivers I ever saw.
Oh, yeah. One collection.
Yeah. Probably a Miami team at some point.
Probably. Trying to think. You know, those Florida teams of the 90s had some really good receivers.
They did. Real quick, back to Julio. To defend him a little bit, Lance, there were only three guys in the NFL all last year that had had double-digit touchdowns for the season.
You know, I was watching.
So that's not terribly uncommon.
I was watching. I'm trying to think where I was yesterday. But I was. I was at dinner. That's what it, and I was watching this fantasy draft.
Uh-huh.
And I was it had projections for all of these receivers when they were being selected. So there was a slew of running backs taken first.
Uh-huh.
And then the receivers started to come in. And it seemed like every receiver projection was 6 or 7 touchdowns for the year.
I mean, it's not terribly uncommon that
but that's what Julio's averaged 6 touchdowns a year throughout his 7-year career.
I mean, 14 or 15 touchdowns for an NFL receiver is a significant amount of touchdowns in a We have been told, Lance, by some people in Tuscaloosa, look at Virginia and Georgia Tech. I think that's kind of what they have in mind. Greg Byrne did this at Arizona, or he was with Arizona recently, obviously, and they redid theirs. And from talking to people in Tuscaloosa and talking to Greg himself, I think that allows him to look at what they did at Arizona, some of the mistakes they might have made in that process of taking an old existing building and trying to retrofit it to be a newer looking building. So having seen some of those mistakes, I think that probably helps him in the situation with Coleman Coliseum.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt. And I think, you know, you can save millions and millions of dollars, but if you're an Alabama fan, you've seen cosmetic work done before on Coleman Coliseum. And I just don't think Alabama fans get excited hearing that infrastructure is going to stay up and we're going to find a way to reinvent it inside.
I don't know how many of our listeners have ever been to, I think it's McCamish Pavilion. Is that the one at Georgia Tech? Is that the name of it?
I've been, but I was there pre-remodel.
They remodeled it, and that one was probably worse than Coleman Coliseum.
Look, it was a complete dump. I'll never forget, you know, I went over for Super Bowl 34 when the Rams played the Titans, and you'll remember Atlanta was frozen over that week.
Yeah.
And Georgia Tech was hosting North Carolina, and it was so bad, the freeze, that they basically offered anyone that showed up on Georgia Tech's campus could have free tickets. And so, you know, I was there for the entire week, and I was like, well, I'm going to go see North Carolina play. Julius Peppers actually played in the game.
Did he?
But if you walked up, they gave you tickets. But, it was a complete dump.
Yeah. They remodeled it, and I think a lot of those elements you could see at Coleman Coliseum. Andrew is in Fultondale. He is next with us. What's up, Andrew? How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I want to get in on the discussion about Bryant Denny. I have personally been there.
Okay.
And, oh, wow. It was not a good experience. I mean, Alabama won, but and I almost had a heat stroke over there because it was so hot. And I think that they need to add 2 more canopies on the top. And as far as restaurants go, I think that they need to add a Baumhauer's in the stadium.
Okay,
hey, Bob would probably dig that, right?
Yeah,
I mean, legendary food, legendary fun.
So he wants 2 canopies and a Baumhauer's.
I think we should put this guy in charge.
He's been there before.
So Alabama won. Well,
you know, I was watching the Jaguars preseason game the other day.
Oh, well, they've got a pool.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. And it was nothing but like 27, 28-year-old chicks that were like plastered up against that glass.
Let me guess. They were all in bikinis.
They were all in bikinis.
Awful. Right, yeah.
But, you know, my only thought is there's no way
you
these
think they
girls
can name one player. I mean, would you – if I gave you a bag of money and said go to that pool and just hand out money if they can name a player.
I've got a better theory on that. Well, they probably know Blake Bortles. Probably know your quarterback. Probably Jalen Ramsey by now. He's probably made himself known in that town. But my theory is these girls, there's no way, hey, what do you want to do tonight? Let's go to the Jags game and hang out at the pool.
Right.
Jacksonville has found a way to actually plant models.
So you think the bag of money has already come out?
Yeah.
This is a paid position.
I think this is a situation where if you're in PR, hey, we need to load this pool up with some lookers.
Right. It's not the worst business model in the world.
I mean, I didn't see one dude in the pool, which is a good thing.
Yeah. So here are some responses on Twitter. Martin says, when asked, Alabama's announcing Bryant Denny upgrades today. As an Alabama fan, what's one thing you'd like to see? Elon Musk Hyperloop from Huntsville to Tuscaloosa. Also beer. Well, beer has been very popular in these
I can imagine.
The Elon Musk Hyperloop from Huntsville to Tuscaloosa. You actually, Lance, independently brought that up in a break. Now, yours was from Birmingham to Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, so, yeah, Elon Musk has done a construction in cooperation with the city of L.A. They announced this yesterday. They're going to build a privately funded tunnel from a subway station in East Hollywood to Dodger Stadium. And they're saying this will reduce traffic by more than an hour in the car to fewer than 4 minutes by electric vehicle. And guess what the cost on this for the patrons that decide to jump on this thing? It's a pretty cool-looking cart, too.
So if I jump in this, I can pay per trip, right?
Right.
And it's going to take me an hour trip down to 4 minutes, a Hyperloop tunnel.
What's this worth to you?
I would say $20 both ways, $40 ride.
It's going to take them real quick. It's going to take the Boring Company, who is taking on this project, 14 months to complete the 3.6-mile tunnel.
Where do you work? I'm at the Boring Company.
Oh, I could have nailed that.
So I'm looking at the cost. I think I read that it's over $1 billion.
Okay. That's going to be hard to make that back at $40 a ride.
Well, it's not $40 a ride. It's $1 per person per trip.
It's what?
$1 per person per trip. I'm not
Lance,
exaggerating.
No, that's impossible.
The Boring Company projects to be operationally profitable by charging a fee of $1 per person per trip.
Well, that's stupid.
I agree with you.
I mean, because if you go and pay to park, how much is parking?
Well, can you imagine for the demand? Oh, the parking's $25-$30 at least.
Okay, so why not at least charge that? I mean, I was going to have to pay that if I drove.
Well, here's what's weird. Okay, so the Boring Company, and look, and I think it's a great idea if you can pull this off, but they're saying when it's ready, 1,500 fans per game can take the company's underground high-speed vehicles.
Well, that's only $1,500.
Exactly. And they said that number can eventually rise to 2,800 fans or 5% of Dodger Stadium's capacity.
I mean, the Boring Company sounds like they're not real good at finances to me. I don't know how that makes sense. All right, here are some other suggestions. Jeremy, ability to communicate with the outside world when you're inside the stadium. We have had that one for decades and decades and decades. Well, as long as you've had cell phones. They've added some cell towers in both end zones. So I think they're already working on that. I'm not going to say it's better this year, but I think they've tried to make it better.
I'm trying to remember if I even went to a game in Bryant-Denny last year. I don't think I did.
I would think you would remember. The previous caller's been to one.
Yeah, I did hear that.
Steven says cell service. Cell service is a big issue.
Well, that was going to be my point, is it was bad a couple of years ago. I don't really remember last year. I don't think I went to a game last year.
Scott says upgraded larger HD screens, or maybe don't take up a third of the screen with ads. Got to pay for those screens somehow. And there is, the video is part of it. The video screen is part of it. That was part of the report in the Tuscaloosa News, that there's going to be something having to do with the video screens in there. The Bama Champs times 17 says escalators to the upper deck. You get that in a lot of pro stadiums, escalators to the upper deck. It's going to be kind of hard to retrofit that in Bryant-Denny, I would guess. I don't know, though.
Man, the escalators, because, you know, I was at Mercedes this past weekend for a concert. And yep. The escalators are so long and so, I mean, there's no width to them. And so you get such a traffic jam on those.
Right, because it's basically one at a time.
But I think for a lot of people, it is a better option than having to walk.
Stephanie says, got to upgrade the food and beverage throughout. The exorbitant amount people pay for season tickets, the current situation is horrendous.
Well, I think what you need to look at is and going back to Mercedes, and I brought this up on Monday, Arthur Blank, they did an ingenious job of actually making concessions affordable for a family.
Yeah.
I told you I went up there, I ordered two pretzels.
Made more profit doing it.
I ordered a beer, and I had a hot dog, or two hot dogs, it was $16.
Right. And they made more profit year to year by lowering their prices. Well, so much so that so many pro franchises are looking at that saying, maybe we should do the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, you go up there, and I mean, are you going to, you'll probably spend the same amount of money or close to it, but you're just going to get more.
Daryl says TVs with other games going around the concession area and on Jumbotron before the pregame. If you had TVs, they do have TVs in the concourse, but it's showing the Alabama game. And you're not going to please everyone. Do you think people would rather have them showing another game or the Alabama game you're missing while you're in line?
I think there needs to be a section. I mean, even, you know, he brought up Baumhauer's, a Baumhauer's, a Buffalo Wild Wings, where you actually have kind of a mini sports bar inside. I mean, that was one of the things, again, about Mercedes. And look, we're talking about a $3 billion facility. But if you go to the kind of the suite level, it's almost underneath.
Yeah.
They've got a million restaurants. They've got this huge layout and a ton of TVs. But if you did like a Buffalo Wild Wings or a Baumhauer's Victory Grill, and you did kind of a scaled down version, but you had 15, 20 TVs where people could come in and watch all of the other games, I think that would be really appealing.
Curtis says a bigger video board would get a lot of the video boards, a lot of the beer, a lot of the sales service. Those are the things that, those are probably the three biggest things. And when Greg Byrne was on this show several months ago, we mentioned that to him. We're like, hey, we could save you a lot of time on the survey. You're going to hear, we want better sales service, we want alcohol in the stadium, and better video boards. I mean, those are the three things that you're going
to
get a lot of.
And I think ultimately you're going to get all those. I mean, the sales service is inevitably just going to continue to get better and better. I mean, it's just technology. The beer, it's going to happen.
Now, to the Coleman Coliseum, like Steven says, Coleman is so poorly designed, only the seats behind the basket are any good. He's right about that. That's the closest you get to the floor is right under the basket. A lot of people are saying just implode Coleman and start over. Timothy says, does destroying Coleman Coliseum count? Bryant-Denny Stadium is fine. Coleman Coliseum, I would imagine. I don't know what they're going to announce in this today. Crimson Standard is the name of the program here. I don't know what they're going to announce today, Lance, but I would imagine Coleman Coliseum is the biggest part of it. I mean, you're going to talk about several hundred million dollars in Coleman Coliseum. I don't know how much they're going to spend on Bryant-Denny, but I don't think it's certainly not going to be to the scale of what they do in Coleman Coliseum.
No, I mean, what really needs to be done at Bryant-Denny? I know we're talking about a few little, you know, things here and there.
Jack's round table. Jason says a live elephant habitat at Bryant-Denny.
Tall order.
It's going to be a lot to do.
A lot of maintenance.
Here's a good idea. I guess. I don't know. I've never been in the restaurant business. Just Matt, how about a sports bar at Bryant-Denny? You mentioned this, but it is open 7 days a week. He said it'd pay for itself on the away games.
Well, you're probably right, yeah, because a lot of people, hey, you just want to go over to the stadium and watch other games.
You watch every game at Bryant-Denny Stadium at that point. You're either a ticket in the stadium or you're at a sports bar or, you know, inside the stadium.
Let's take it a little bit deeper. Let's imagine that Buffalo Wild Wings, hey, another thing that's going to be inevitable. I mean, look, we're legalizing this.
Yep. Anything to take me away from the actual game.
Do you not think this would be a great in-game fan experience that you could walk down to a Buffalo Wild Wings, you could get a beer, you could buy a ticket at a halftime wager, whatever you wanted to do?
I mean, it's coming to the pro stadiums. They've already got it at Meadowlands, right? It's inevitable. It's going to happen at some point at college stadiums. I don't know how long it'll take in this state. I mean, it's got to be legalized first in this state. There's places where it's legal. But it's legal in Mississippi, and I know the Southeastern Conference would have a hardline stand against it at this point, I would imagine. But once it's legalized in a state, I mean, it's tricky being on a college campus. I get that. But how close to a college campus can I go and actually make a wager, you know? I mean, if you've got wagering kiosks – At some point,
I'll give you an example. There are casinos in Baton Rouge.
Right.
LSU is obviously right there.
And it's not far from the campus or the stadium. It's just a couple miles.
You know, eventually it is going to come to those casinos in Baton Rouge where you can legally wager on, you know, a college football game. Hey, for great food, live music, Birmingham's most famous cocktails, it's Odie's Tavern in Crestline Village. Had an opportunity to do Odie's Team Trivia again there last night. We do it every single Wednesday night. It's a ton of fun. Make sure you come out this weekend. Live music all weekend long. Bowling and bragging. We'll be out in the parking lot, me and Rockstar. Rodney Davis will be serving up the incredible food from the cheeseburgers, the incredible sandwiches like the Diablo sandwich. It's a Birmingham institution located in Crestline Village. It is Odie's Tavern.
Tyler, playing off the Cleveland story, a beer fridge that opens when Alabama wins. It's a safer bet for Budweiser in Cleveland.
This thing ain't got no door.
Let's go to Ted on a cell phone. He's next. Hey, Ted, how are you?
I'm great, guys. Good to talk to you again. Love the show.
Thank you, brother.
Just got back in Birmingham back in October and listened to you guys and looking forward to football season with you. I've been fortunate in my life. I've lived a few places, and more importantly, me and my buddies take a college football trip every fall. We go to random places. And I'll just say, Bryant-Denny's nice, okay?
Okay.
The cell service sucks.
It does.
And the food is overpriced.
Right.
For sure. But Bryant-Denny's a nice stadium. So there's really not a bad view in it. My season tickets aren't great, but they're not terrible either. And I would say I think the beer thing will never happen because it's an on-campus stadium, right?
Well, I mean, that's interesting because it's happened in other on-campus stadiums.
Yeah, I mean, you've got it right now in Austin.
Yeah, West Virginia had it. And the theory behind it, and there is evidence to support this, Ted, Lance, I believe the theory behind it is if people are allowed to drink in the stadium, they will not overindulge before going into the stadium, right?
That is the theory, and I tend to kind of believe that.
And I think arrests and accidents went down at West Virginia and perhaps in Austin as well, if I'm not mistaken. Now, that's a very limited sample size, obviously, so, you know, take it for what it's worth.
I went to the West Virginia-Auburn game when they put an Auburn plate up there back in the day.
Right.
Holy crap, that place is like Sodom and Gomorrah, man. I mean, no offense to any WVU fans, but holy crap. I mean, good Lord. I mean, wow. I mean, it was fun if you like that kind of fun.
Okay.
But anyway, great show, guys. Interesting take there. I had no idea that I didn't know that. So maybe they will get beer and Brian Denny. We'll see.
Well, that's a conference issue. The Southeastern Conference would first have to allow that, if I'm not mistaken. I am told, Lance, that you can bet on an Ole Miss game within an hour from the stadium. That's as close as you can get right now because Tunica is the most recent one to actually take bets. So you'd have to do that one on the way to the game. But there'll be a time where it's off. Wouldn't you think as this evolves, there'll be time where it's off property that a William Hill or somebody like that, a Westgate or whoever will have an off property. It's not even at a casino. It's just a kiosk or a storefront or something where you can walk in and place a legal sports bet.
Yeah, I could see that. You know, I mean, what is it? I don't know if it's still the corner store right there in front of Tutwiler.
Yeah.
But you've got on the other side of that, between the corner and between the bookstore, you've got just a little William Hill shop.
What would the line like be for that joint?
Yeah, be crazy. I mean, look, for us to even be talking about the legalization of sports gambling in Tunica shows you we're light years ahead of where we were just a few years ago.
Chase on a cell next. Hey, Chase, how are you?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey.
From what I understand the way cell phone towers work, and I don't profess to be any kind of telephony engineer or whatever you would call them, but the closer you get to a cell phone tower, the worse your reception gets because they broadcast, from my understanding, out in a concentric circle. So the closer you get to the pole under that umbrella, the worse your reception gets. So putting them right at Brian Denny, don't see how that's going to work. You'd have to put that sucker like on top of Tutwiler or something get outside that umbrella.
I'm going to assume they consulted people that probably know more about it than you before they went to that expense, but I don't know.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying if anybody knows how they modern day work, I'd be glad to. Would love to hear it because from what my understanding was years ago, that ain't going to work and it's not going to get any better.
All right, thank you, Chase. Chase says they may have wasted their time putting cell towers on Brian Denny. Pretty smart people over there that approve the money spending. I'm going to assume they made sure it would work before they spent that kind of money. Maybe that's a bad assumption by me. But I think there are 16 of them that they've added.
Wow. What do you think your typical tower cost?
A few $100.
They're not cheap. I don't think you run down to Walmart and grab those. John and Helena is next. Hey, John, how are you?
Hey, pretty good. I'd like to see them put backs on the seats.
Yeah, we got another person that said that. I think it was Gary that said bleachers are old school. Let's go seat backs in every spot. Boy, I'd drastically reduce your capacity.
Remember Legion Field back in the day had those gold seats?
Yeah, they were like 20 back seats.
And you're like, man, yeah. to be in one of those gold seats one day.
One day, Pepple. Yeah, one day.
That was my ambition in life.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not against anybody drinking, but right now where I sit, people get up and go to the bathroom 2 and 3 times a game, and if you had beer there, they'd be going 5 and 6 times a game just to get beer. Then they go, then they have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, you need to put the drinkers on the end of the aisle. I was at a concert this past weekend, and I felt bad how many times I got up.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
That's a good point.
Somebody else mentioned the seat backs, but that's going
to – Would that drive you crazy as a non-drinker if you're sitting in the middle of an aisle or at the end of an aisle and somebody continues to come by you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I would like for you to limit that as much. And I feel bad when I'm doing it. You know, I've got – like I was at a Barons game not long ago and we had interior seats. And I got kids, you know, and I kept having to walk past this guy. And I apologized to him. I was like, man, I am so – he was incredibly nice about it. I was like, I am so sorry. I know we've busted you up a lot here, but I got kids.
I've negotiated a lot of things, but I've never actually – that would be a pretty good idea if you've got somebody at the end of the aisle. Like, yeah. I'll buy you a couple of drinks or I'll give you an extra $20 to switch seats with me because I'm going to be wearing you out. I'm going to give you a heads up.
It's not the worst idea in the world.
I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. We've all heard that mortgage interest rates have started to rise, but I'm not here to scare you like those other banks and mortgage companies. I'm still locking loans in, saving people thousands of dollars a month. Thehomeloanexpert.com.
The Home Loan Expert, LLC.